Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves currently have the number one and two scoring leaders in the AHL. Be there Saturday as the Wolves host Iowa at 7 and Sunday at 3 versus Manitoba. Enjoy discounted concessions and free parking this season courtesy of the 29 Kia Sportage. Anthony Herron, presented by Cassidy Tire and Service. He is all things football. He's got a food segment. He
does
pro
everything.
Football, college football, Pac-12 Network. Hello, Big Ant Herron. How are you?
Hello. I was just telling you guys, I'm excited. This is going to be a week where I think I get a couple hours of sleep, and I'm going to need it because my son, we gave him his, I didn't give him the flu shot, but we took him to get his flu shot last week, and he's been really sick. And so my wife gets really worried about whether or not when I get sick, if I infect everyone else in the house. So she's got me on this mission to make sure I get adequate sleep, kind of finishing up the college football portion of my slate. I think this is going to be a week where I get a couple of hours because I've got Arizona State and Eugene versus Oregon. I've had both teams multiple times this year. That should allow me some respite in the evening time before I get up and do Big Ten this morning.
And you travel a lot. I did see a study done that if you're worried about a common cold virus, that which is usually picked up by contact, it's not usually airborne, it's usually surface-borne, that make sure in an airplane you are not touching things near the middle of the cabin where there are way more germs
because
there's way more contact, way more hands on those little hand rests on the tops of seats as people are moving through. So if you get a window seat, you're more likely to be out of the way, out of the river of germs when it comes to contact stuff.
So since I'm... Yes, exactly.
Bling, 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 tough bling. To do, though, at your height. At my height, I mean, I'm 6'3". I got to have the aisle,
it's
otherwise
difficult.
Everything locks up on
now,
me.
Fortunately, I fly the same airline very consistently. They treat me really well. They're not dragging me down the aisles usually. And so I actually get
to fly. It's rhinovirus air.
Yes, that one. That one. They're just dragging people down the aisles constantly on rhinovirus air. But I'm usually in first class, and I'm normally in the aisle seat, so I do get away with that. When I'm not in first, I'm still in some sort of an economy plus. But actually, the exit row is usually right there in the middle of the plane. So if I'm not upgraded, I'm in the exit row. I guess I am in harm's way there. Is that why there's this film, like the just in the air, you can kind of see the thickness in the middle of the plane?
Just sanitize a lot. Make sure you have that sanitized around you.
I have a point.
As we talk Bears, I have a pass rushing question for you regarding Khalil Mack. Okay. And this stems from a conversation I was having with somebody yesterday who's a professional personal trainer. And we're talking about why it is that everything Mack does when compared to another average NFL player, it seems like when Mack does it, it has more of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about what boxing experts said about peak level Gennady Golovkin, that the same punch seemed to hurt someone more when it came from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the physics of it, but why is it that an otherwise mundane punch by Khalil Mack seems to knock over a 300-pound man?
Bodies fly.
Why is it that people bounce off of him and the same movements that he makes seem more impactful than when other people do it?
The reason that there's such carnage when Khalil Mack makes contact with an opponent is it's generated not only from the ground. The ground-based power is part of everything we do in football. But what's so underappreciated, even for really big guys, even for 350-pounders, when you see them slinging people across the field, a lot of that force is generated from the trunk area, from your, you know, you don't have to have a six-pack to have ab muscles. And so that trunk stability that's become so prevalent for the line of scrimmage, for guys to be able to maintain proper pad level. And when you're coming out of your stance, and this is, you know, whether I'm working with really young kids when I'm teaching the game or professionals when I'm teaching the game and talking line of scrimmage play, the ability to maintain leverage and pad level when you come out of your stance, it provides explosion. And that mass and speed that you can bring into a blocker equal the impact. That's why you see bodies fly, because he's able to explode out of his stance. He initially maintains a certain level of pad level and leverage, but on impact, his trunk, you can tell Khalil Mack has immensely strong muscles through his trunk, and he's able to, as he generates the power from the ground, he's able to sustain it. And the explosion is really coming from the trunk area. And that's why, whether he's doing one of those one-hand stab moves or like when he the other day when he made the counter move on one player and then the other blocker's just waiting on him somewhere near the quarterback and he just trucks the guy and the body goes flying. And it looks like he's done something superhuman, because he has. But it's because of the power he can generate from the ground that actually is sustained through his trunk area.
So it's focused power and it's lack of heat loss along the way.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's a better insulated wire.
Uh-huh. That coil that's right there in the abdominal, in that trunk area, it coils up, it maintains the force as it's working through, and then it comes out through his shoulders and through his hands and as he extends. And, you know, everything needs to be really strong. But what would separate a Khalil Mack from someone else who's 6'3", 250, there's a lot of guys in the NFL who are playing linebacker who are 6'3", 250 that with a 10-yard head start can't do what he does to offensive tackles within 2 to 3 steps. But it's because of the power that he initially generates but can maintain it, and that power explodes out through his trunk area.
Highlight reel plays aside, and I know it's a tough question to answer, but it's why we've got to answer it. Does he look 100% to you? Did he look like Khalil Mack at, you know, week one, week two levels?
Not yet. Yeah. Not yet. No. There was still a level of burst at finish. You know, the power that he's able to, or that we saw the other day after a couple of weeks off, he's still able to initiate and engage that power. I would say just from a sheer speed standpoint and watching him attempt to turn the corner at times, his lower body still looks a bit uneasy, a bit unsteady. The stability you need in the lower body, and I've talked a bit about where you'll see certain guys blow tires as they're trying to turn the corner when they don't keep their cleats in the ground. Your ankle and your feet area, that lower body region below the knees, as healthy as it can be, is what allows you the stability when you're trying to turn the corner. As you're generating speed, as you have so much force that's, you know, being generated by your own natural force, but then also when you have a blocker pushing against you and you're fighting force with that lower region below the knees, if you're unstable in that area, then it can affect your path. And he wasn't able to create what I would call the short corner. That I, when I teach the game and I talk to pass rushers, the short corner is when you can get to the edge of a blocker so quickly that you've gotten beyond them and now you're not continuing to run the hoop. Like I gave you that description a couple of weeks ago about how Tom Brady's so slow that we just ran all the way up the field and it didn't matter how long it took us to get there, because if he's holding the ball, we're going to run him down. You want to be able to create the short corner as a pass rusher where you get to the hip, that outside third of the offensive blocker, and can quickly whip your hips up the field to get downhill. And that's where a lot of his strips end up coming from. If he's not making just flush contact and collision with the quarterback because he's defeated a blocker cleanly, because he can still turn that short corner and get his hips and his shoulders flipped, that's where a lot of Khalil Mack's strips have come from throughout his career.
Why have the Bears been so good at pass blocking, so poor at run blocking, and wherein lies the difference?
I would honestly say a lot of it is about the scheme. The scheme this season, I anticipated it would drastically improve the way we view the Bears' pass protection, especially at the offensive tackle position where, you know, Leno and Massey, they've been here. They've been starting together for a couple of seasons now. We've seen them under the Fox regime and with Dow Loggins calling the plays where they did seem to struggle in pass protection, especially in predictable passing downs and distances. And Matt Nagy's system does allow the offensive line more – well, instead of more of an advantage, I'll say less of a disadvantage against some of these pass rushers in the National Football League, because guys don't have the ability to tee off, to know predictively not only that the pass is going to happen, but where the pass will come from, what the launch point of the quarterback is, because there is enough pocket mobility with sprints and boots and a lot of the eye candy that's in the backfield. And their blocking surface changes so frequently because you will have – you know, even if it's just a Taylor Gabriel streaming by your face, if you're an edge blocker, that's something that for a moment you have to honor, that gives you that millimoment of hesitation with the angle of your rush and the aggression of your rush. So there's so much eye candy and launch point mobility that we tend to see from the Bears offense that it saps the pass rush, their aggression with their pass rush, and at a certain point the energy of the pass rush, because you're so – this is something that the Indianapolis Colts – early in Peyton Manning's career got really good at, where and Mitch is getting better at the part that Peyton was always great at, and varying the snap count being a part of that as well, and using dummy cadences. Those things add up to this full puzzle, the arsenal that you can throw at an opposing pass rush to make it really difficult for them to rush with the level of commitment that I was speaking about lacking from Leonard Floyd at times when he's trying to rush the quarterback. It's hard to get home as a pass rusher in the NFL today when you're not fully committed to it. And the Bears sapped the commitment of their opponent's pass rush. That's aided the pass protection so much. The run game, these same things I'm talking about that have aided the pass protection, have in some ways hindered the run game, because this is a group and Kyle Long notwithstanding. But for the most part, the bulk of this group, Cody Whitehair, Charles Leno, and Bobby Massey, these are guys who've been together a lot in recent years and blocked a certain way, had a very vertical nature to the way they block and attack opponents directly off the ball. And that's not what this run game is. And that's part of where, when you spent the first maybe 2.5 or 3 quarters doing a lot of lateral mobility with your blocking and doing a lot of eye candy, and the offensive line, who maybe in more of a zone sense, has stepped laterally a lot. Then in the fourth quarter, it's like, all right, let's close this thing out. Let's bust these suckers in the nose. Then you've been back on your haunches so much in the game. There's a rhythm that it takes to get to that, where Jordan Howard is best running vertically from the neutral position behind the quarterback. And this offensive line is great when they can just come off and double team and combo and move people off the ball. And it's just very different what they're being asked to do right now.
You mentioned them varying their cadences. I wonder what you thought of and how it says the scheme, the coach and the quarterback are all working together, that they came out no huddle the way they did, and that Mitch seemed to control those play calls and those kills, those audibles, as quickly as he did.
It was fun. It was fun to see that. And it's one thing, you know, for that to take place right at the start of the game. And it was fun to watch it, but to see his level of comfort the remainder of the game as well, because if they went no huddle, like, you know, let's think about the opener against Green Bay, where all this cool stuff happened in the first, like, two drives. And then a lot of the rest of the game, it's like, he looks a lot more uncomfortable now. Mm-hmm. But they came out going no huddle. They came out with some various personnel groupings, and they came out allowing Mitch to sort of run the show. And we saw him able to do that early in the game. And then even once they slowed the tempo down a bit, we still saw a level of comfort from Mitchell Trubisky in that game the other day that, you know, and I think I probably said it on the air with you after the Detroit Lions game last year, where John Fox went to the podium and said, you know what, that was the best game Mitch has ever played. And, you know,
so initially, he threw like 6 passes or something.
Well, in the second half, he did air it out more, though. It was the game at Detroit where, you know, the game was starting to get out of hand, but Mitch had some really nice throws in that game. It was like 3rd and 18, and he laced one in there. Like 1st and 17, backed up in his own end zone. He's just drilling the ball in there, and he's moving and rolling and throwing it on the fly. And John Fox came to the podium after that Detroit game and said, that was the best game Mitch has played. And it sounded crazy at the time because the Bears were so horrible. But looking at it just through the lens of where he was and how he looked, like, yeah, it was. And when Matt Nagy came afterwards and said, yeah, that was Mitch's best game of the year. It wasn't a 6-touchdown game, but this game, his level of precision that he played the position with and throwing in rhythm and throwing from rhythm within the pocket and then even in second reaction throws where he had to extend the play. That pass he threw to Ben Broniker, where he's rolling to the right and still, with his eyes down the field, has the presence of mind to continue reading coverage. He's still reading coverage at that point while he's
seeing
moving.
The back of the defensive back's helmet, too.
Seeing it and knowing precisely where he has to put the football, and Broniker makes a great catch on it. That's next level. That's graduate-level quarterback play that we have seen momentarily from Mitch. But start to end, and there was a point in the middle where the offense dried up a little bit, but that was the most comfortable, the most precise he has ever looked when you're putting 4 quarters of a game together. And he did it in the divisional game. You know, he knows this is a big stretch of games coming up. They're in divisional play right now. He showed up. He balled out. That was such a fun way to watch the Bears play offense, regardless of the fact that the run game sputtered. I'd love it if the run game didn't sputter, but just looking at what they need from Mitch to be able to do, that was the highest level of quarterback he's ever played.
This segment brought to you by Subway. They're raising the stakes with Subway Restaurant's Steak and Cheese Signature Wrap, Chipotle Southwest Steak and Cheese Signature Wrap, and the Chipotle Cheese Steak Sub on their new Sunflower Crunch Bread, limited time only at participating restaurants. We all watch 52. When the Bears are on defense. Mm-hmm. And we may be at that point again that so many of us remember from our childhood about being excited, hoping the Bears are on defense to start sometimes to get to see a recovering Khalil Mack play. What's the next guy you find yourself focusing on? Because it's sometimes in football, to be honest, you got to pick a guy. You got to pick a spot. You got to pick a guy. When you do that, after Mack, if we take him out, who's the next guy you like watching?
Roquan. Roquan's fun to watch because week by week, and I've talked to you guys a bit about his growth against the run and how quickly he's reading things and reacting downhill. What I loved the other day was two part. The initial part is that we saw him reacting well to the run again, but then also the way Vic utilized him within the game plan and the wider scope of the attack mentality that Fangio called the game with, because having Khalil Mack back in the lineup means you don't need to blitz. You can get there with four and be fine.
Yet Vic, they were great with five.
Yes. Yes. And Vic still found moments. He blitzed situational. He brought Bryce Callahan. He brought Roquan Smith. And when we saw Roquan in just week by week, he's getting more comfortable, more in rhythm. He was a great blitzer. He timed it up well in college, and he got there and had that burst to finish at the QB, and he could find his way through little cracks and creases in the protection if he initially wasn't there cleanly. But the other day, to make that splash play, getting the sack on the blitz, and just constantly being near the ball, not being just stuck on an offensive lineman, but more aggressively, more assertively, taking on blockers, and then when he didn't feel like he was going to take on that block, feeling confident about the path to backdoor block, to immediately go over the top of a block. He is week by week looking more and more like a guy who's recognizing the full scope of his powers at this level of football. And so it's going to be, you know, by the time we get to December, if he continues on this path, we're going to see a very high level of play from him. So I'm glad that Fangio is calling him into certain things, but even when he's not being called into things with a blitz, he's playing faster now than he has throughout the season.
You mentioned how important this stretch of divisional play is going to be for the Bears. After a break, I want to get into exactly what this Vikings team looks like to you and what 3 games in 12 days does to a human body and why we allow that to happen in the NFL. He's Anthony Herron here on Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Akeem Hicks. That's a theme of this Bears team, winning for each other, not necessarily trying to prove those outsiders wrong or to own the haters. They're just working together toward a common goal, and it's kind of refreshing.
Well, that's why Dez Bryant wasn't here blowing out his Achilles in Chicago. Like, remember earlier in the season, like, oh, Bears bring in Dez Bryant. That'd be great. Get another playmaker in it. No, he didn't fit the culture that they were trying to build. And, you know, Ryan Pace has rightfully so earned some angst and some downtrodden opinions about him in his initial years running things, but it's impressive how quickly he's gone from a guy who was making some bad decisions to a guy who reshaped this roster in the manner where now, in the past year and a half, he's turned the Bears roster into one of the more talented in the National Football League. So he's been allowed to learn and improve on the job. Not everyone gets that opportunity, but when given that opportunity, he has done that. He is better at his job now than he was 3 or 4 years ago. And if you're going to keep the job, then you may as well get better at it. And he's done that.
You know the voice. It's Anthony Herron here to talk football with us on the Bernstein and McKnight Show every Tuesday at noon. How do 3 games in 12 days affect the human body? I mean, every Bears player has been asked about this the last couple of days, but none of them are going to say what you might say, not having to go play those games. You are done with the NFL. How can you prepare for anything like that?
Well, especially because the Bears haven't really faced these teams yet. You know, they're going to see the Lions twice in the next 3 games. It's going to be the first time they see the Vikings. So perhaps it'd be a little bit different if you were facing Green Bay, who you faced in the division already. So, you know, if you had already had several divisional games in through the first half of the regular season, from a prep standpoint, that would certainly aid the willingness to throttle back. But you still have to throttle back from a practice standpoint, especially with, you know, with that Thanksgiving game being sandwiched in there and the very short week that's associated with that. What is helpful, though, is that it at least is in this second half of the season. And so right now, to have 3 games in 12 days and the way you will have to contain and compartmentalize who gets work in which situations in practice, it's at least now that your system is essentially in place. They're still going to throw a few. I mean, we saw the other day, they're throwing new things out there offensively. But defensively, the guys out there on the field have a great sense for what's going on with that scheme. Offensively, they're deep enough into the season where there's packages that they've already grown and gotten more comfortable with. So it would be far more taxing mentally to try and do what you need to do to prep for 3 games in 12 days on the practice field if this were happening earlier in the year. So the fact that we're, whatever, week 11 we're going into now, I think that helps them be able to manage the practice portion of what they need to do to survive 3 games in 12 days.
Obviously, you're coaching the game that you're in at the moment, but I wonder if knowledge of that stress on human bodies affects rotations and affects your active roster about how you manage your human resources here. Somebody like Bilal Nichols has been playing really well. Do you make sure that you're rotating guys in a little bit more and talking to guys about how they feel in a given game. It's hard to think about that because it's sort of like the thing in a baseball series with the use of a pitching staff. You can only win that game that you're playing that day. But I wonder if there's a way to sort of split the difference and say we might use somebody in a rotation a little bit more than we otherwise would, as long as things are going okay.
It's possible. I don't believe it's likely for this coming Sunday night game because it's the Vikings, because it's what I view as the main possibility for the team that will overtake. And I believe, honestly, I think Minnesota will likely by the end of the season overtake Chicago and win the division. I do. I think there's a good chance three teams will come out of the division. I think it's going to be Minnesota and Chicago, who are the two teams, and Green Bay will be the team playing for the wild card. So this is that first game, that first matchup against the Vikings. And you want this to be one where you're putting it forward regardless of how it'll affect the following game. For the Bears, the attitude of how they've prepared leading up to this point, I think, resting Khalil Mack, resting Allen Robinson back-to-back games, that's you sort of gassing up for this stretch of these three consecutive games in 12 days. I think now that you're here, now that you're in it, you got to just kind of go all out. As far as the gameplay standpoint of it, in practice, you find ways to manage reps and to throttle back. In the game itself, you're putting what you have as your best foot. That's that foot, and hopefully both feet are going forward. Then maybe if you get to the point where something's out of hand in the fourth quarter, and you can say, "Hey, Khalil, go ice that foot." We're going to get Isaiah Irving out there instead, or whatever the case may be. Then hopefully you're in that position. But I don't think you necessarily take that approach off the bat of trying to plan and plot the coming weeks forward yet.
If the Vikings then are to take this thing from the Bears, is that an assessment of their wide receiver core just being unstoppable? Is that a defense that is clicked together, a combination of things? What is it that you think they do better than the 6-3 Bears?
I do think it's the roster in the division that's comparable to Chicago's as far as just having playmakers at every level on both sides of the ball. And, they certainly have, from an experience standpoint, the experience edge at quarterback and just postseason play. A team that's been into the playoffs already together, they've handled the stage that a lot of the Bears players haven't necessarily had to handle, especially handling it together at this point. And that there's a lot to be said about the chemistry of a team as it has been through the fire together before. And Chicago hasn't necessarily been through the fire together as a team. They've got a lot of guys who work hard together, and they say a lot of the right things, and that's all great. But there's a chemistry that the Vikings have been able to have that's not assumed. We can assume the Bears' chemistry in crunch time and crucial moments and in big stages. Vikings have been there, and they've done that by making the playoffs together last season. So I would say the rosters, the playmakers are comparable. Minnesota is the team who's actually been there and done that.
Is it some too that they need to know how to win? We've talked in weeks before that the foot came off the gas pedal a little early in some games, in some wins that the Bears have had. I think you could probably make that argument against the Lions even to a certain standpoint. Is that part of this, or is it more like you said, just having been through it?
The ability to just kind of choke teams out, for lack of a less crass way to say it, to step on somebody's throat, to curb stomp your opponent, whatever a very visceral term.
Well, yeah, it's football. You use that
football
kind of imagery.
Yeah, I tend to like using it myself. But to do that is still a different gear than the crucial level of execution necessary against divisional opponents in a game like this. Like, they had the Lions overmatched from jump. They're not going to have the Vikings overmatched from jump. We saw, going back to that opener against Green Bay, they did have Green Bay overmatched from jump, but then there's just a couple of individuals on the Packers who said, "No, you're not getting this tonight, mm-hmm. Chicago." But that's a playoff gear. That's a divisional game gear that the Bears need to showcase. They weren't forced to showcase that against Detroit. So that's where I think this game will look and feel different. That's why this game was flexed by NBC and is going to be on Sunday Night Football because of how key it is to both of these teams who are going to come down to the final weeks of the regular season trying to win this division title. Minnesota is a team that's had to express and has been shown the ability to express that divisional gear. The Bears right now, intangibly are the team still, for me, I'm waiting to see. I like what I'm seeing. There's a lot of the building blocks I've talked to you guys about where Mitchell's playing some of his better football in the fourth quarter instead of the first quarter now. The pass rush starting to close out games a little better now. All those things lead me to believe Chicago has the ability to do it. Now I want to see it against the team that I think is going to win the division.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves currently have the number one and number two scoring leaders in the AHL. Be there Saturday as the Wolves host Iowa at 7 and Sunday at 3 versus Manitoba. Enjoy discounted concessions and free parking this season, courtesy of the 2019 Kia Sportage. What to do about Cody Parkey? He's got the guaranteed money. He's gotten to the point where, with all the confidence that we're gaining in Matt Nagy and Mitchell Trubisky, you talk about these divisional games. You talk about playoff speed and intensity. The fact that that guy is going to be standing over a kick from 42 yards and nobody who's been watching him and maybe nobody on the sideline is going to actually believe that that guy's just going to bang it through and get out of there with a win, that's a tough spot to put everybody in.
It is.
What do you do?
For the moment, you keep rolling the ball out there and say, Cody, keep kicking it, and we hope you get into a rhythm. Kicker is it's such a different deal than any other position, because when you get the yips as a kicker, there's not a lot that the surrounding forces can do to get you out of it. I mean, you know, Matt Nagy can say, hey, get down to Soldier Field once or twice a week, and let's see, you know, if that helps you get out of it, if you get comfortable in the surroundings down there. So, you know, just from an execution standpoint, that would maybe be a good idea, just to see if that helps matters in the chillier weather here and with the wind patterns. And Matt Nagy even referenced, you know, maybe the stands and the field goal posts just optically look different to him as he addresses the ball. That might help. That's not necessarily why he's missing four kicks, why he's hitting the crossbar over and over again. I do think that things got a little yippy, and he hasn't necessarily looked like he's been stroking it true every game over and over again to me throughout the season. So, you know, you gotta bide with this for a little bit. Fortunately, the Bears are in a position right now where they can bide with their kicker at the moment, because the rest of the team is executing at such a high level. You can take the Cody Parkey risk for a couple of weeks and hope he comes through it. If he doesn't, then you got to make a call at a certain point. But the thing is, it's not like, hey, let's find some veteran. It's not Willie Young. Are you in shape? Come in and rush a quarterback, because Aaron Lynch isn't giving us as much. You know, it's different because you get some other kicker off the couch. Maybe his mind is right. Maybe it isn't. Maybe his hip is great. Maybe it's not. You're not as confident. You're improving your situation.
You know those golf games where you realize you're swinging at the ball and not through the ball?
That's me every time, but I'm familiar with how it looks.
But you understand, yes. You understand that in your head, when I watch his legs swing through, in my mind, like, I feel my golf game, and it looks like he's swinging his foot at the ball, where other kickers are just executing their leg swing, and the ball happens to be there. And I've heard golf instructors say, forget the ball is there.
Uh-huh.
Just get your swing, know exactly what your swing path is, and don't necessarily see the back of the ball. Just obliterate the ball.
You just want to see him make a smooth, true stroke with confidence, and as he follows through, like, he just knows where the ball's going to go. And right now, it feels like a hoping thing. It feels like once the foot, that instep is making contact, like, he's just not completely sure where it's going to go.
And the ball slips in the air a little bit. Like, have it make the same sound as the other team's kicker's foot makes.
Kickoffs, for that matter.
And it can be corrected as quickly as Sunday night. Like, if they say, Cody, go kick this 50-yarder after if we get stalled on a drive in the second quarter and it's a 3-3 game, we want you to give us the lead going into halftime, and he kicks a 50-yarder going into the half and it goes right down the middle, then all is forgiven and all is right with the world. Like, it can happen that quickly, but you need to give a Cody Parkey that opportunity to do it, because if you don't, then what are you going to do? You're going to move on to just some dude. You know, hey, Dan Bernstein, come in. Like, you look like a kicker. Can you come in and just see if you can?
Used to be good.
Yeah, you just start bringing in guys off the street when things are going well. Then, you know, that I don't think it would immediately erode at just the overall texture of what the locker room has right now. But things are going really well. They're dancing to disco balls after a lot of games right now. That's a good feeling. So even as, you know, things from a performance standpoint are imperfect, you want to give your guys the opportunity to grow through that together. If Cody Parkey comes out of this and starts kicking the ball really well, that's really going to pay dividends later on. So you need to give him a little bit of rope here to see if he works through it, because if he does, now you've got a guy who you invested in, who you showed belief in, and now that will pay off for you later. If he continues to not earn your trust and show that he's not worthy of it, then at a certain point, a move needs to be made. But for right now, they need to let him earn it. And if he does, then I really think it'll pay more dividends than bringing in some other guy who might be marginally better.
All right, what have you been doing in the Pac-12 network on ant bites? Have you found any nice little morsels advise us?
There was a place this past weekend when I was in Tempe called College Bar, which I usually think
Connors, they got a lot of Connors money.
Place
there.
Called College Bar.
I was just in Tempe this weekend. I wish I'd known. Now I would have called you. I had no idea that you were there.
Yeah, you could have came up to the booth. We could have got some.
Well, not in this.
And Urlacher was out there. Urlacher was out there too because Brian Urlacher is actually friends with the defensive coordinator. He was teammates with Arizona State's defensive coordinator, Danny Gonzalez.
Yeah.
So we actually had Brian out at the game, and he was hanging out with actually one of my old teammates from Iowa, a guy named Kevin Casper, who's a Chicago area guy. He lives in Tempe now. But yeah, the College Bar, which is literally across the street from Sun Devil Stadium, was a really cool spot to
yes,
go
it is.
To.
And
Yes, it is.
You've
experienced
good times.
College Bar.
Good times there. Yeah, number of places you could walk around that campus and get yourself a good time.
Going to Eugene this weekend for another Arizona State, who Herm Edwards is actually trying to win the division title. Herm Edwards has Arizona State in the South Division lead. He might make the Pac-12 championship game actually with a more effective season than Northwestern's had. Like, Arizona State's actually been more consistent than Northwestern has this year. Northwestern's already locked up the West Division in the Big Ten, so the South has been in the Pac-12 really difficult to dictate. But right now, ASU, if they went out, they're going to win the Pac-12 South. And go to the Pac-12 championship game. And Herm Edwards, with his, whatever he is, 65-year-old butt with all his catchphrases, he is going to be the coach leading the way to get him there. It's going to be a fun game.
Anthony, thank you.
Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it, fellas.
Anthony Herron brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. Annual timeshare maintenance fees are hitting the mail just in time for the holidays. If it's time to get out, call Timeshare Exit Team. They'll get you out legally and forever. Call 844-915-EXIT or timeshareexitteam.com. We mentioned it with Paul Charchian, this complete disaster that's building regarding the Monday night game, and perhaps you weren't informed about what's going on with the field and how they've let this get to this point. Mike Florio, who is going to join us tomorrow, has got some stuff here that just put up at ProFootballTalk.com about the complete mess of a situation the NFL has found itself in.
Well, it's only the Chiefs and the Rams, so it's not like anybody's going to want to tune in for that thing. We'll get into that next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.